Hello, hello, and welcome to another exciting episode of Skeptics and Seekers on Discernment. This for us, I'm David Johnson. Let's get started with Andrew. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
This is not a well-thought-out show. We turned on the mic because I had a thought or two, and then Andrew had a thought or two that he just wanted to get in that was fairly tangential. And so we're just going to do that. That's what you're going to get. Happy Easter.
Not surprised.
This is what it's down to. No, Mac and I haven't split up yet. We're loving the partnership. We're going to be doing some more stuff, announcing some stuff very soon, probably the next time we get out, that I think everyone's going to be excited about. Our schedules have just crossed over the last couple of efforts. One other thing before jumping into the subject proper, everyone knows that my knee is foobarred. So Monday, there's a minor procedure. I mean, they call it a minor procedure. It's not a procedure. It's just a fancy injection. If you want to look it up, it's a meniscal trigger point injection. And that just shows how violent this country has gotten, that we can't even do talk about knee injections without pulling the trigger. A trigger point injection. It's the only thing that makes it quote unquote a procedure, and you can't drive yourself and you got to have somebody with you and all that crap, is because they basically inject your knee full of anesthesia. apparently there's enough of that to mess you up a little bit. So we'll see how that goes. What they're ultimately going to do, since they can't do the knee replacement, which is what is necessary, what's ultimately going to happen, it's just going to take a few times to get there, is they will find the nerves that are feeding the area, and they're going to cut them and burn the ends.
They're going to shoot them. They're going
burn to burn. No. No, they're going to, that's just the interim thing that'll buy some time. They will,
that's what
they
will
burn the ends of the nerves, and that'll be it, because they won't grow back. That's that. Easter. By the way, for the uninitiated, Easter is the thing. It's the time when we celebrate when Jesus and the Easter Bunny laid eggs. And chocolate. Wait a minute. Hang on. Sorry.
It's as good as the other story.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry. One of those characters, either Jesus or the Easter Bunny, doesn't exist. So I'm just going to leave that out there.
That, my friend, is what we call a false dichotomy.
Is it? So right. So here's the thing. We do Easter every year. Easter, this focus on the resurrection. That's really what it's all about. The death, burial, and resurrection, the passion story of Jesus. The Gospels, especially John, has been described as a passion story with a long introduction. That's really the point of these Gospels, except for Mark, which ends in a weird way because, you know, Jesus, he doesn't actually show up after his quote-unquote resurrection. But, you know, Matthew fixed that, and then Luke built on it, and then John, he really spent some time on that. So so we do this every year. How long have we been doing Easter?
Well, surprisingly not since his death.
Okay. I had not thought about that, but yeah.
Christian nation, this is I'm aware of it. I'm not responsible for it. This big celebration, It didn't start in year two. Sorry.
So this also brings to mind a bad argument. I just want to throw it out here because I really haven't thought this through. So if you guys want to take me to task for some bad reasoning, you'll have many, many targets. This will be a target-rich environment, I'm sure. Skepticsandseekers.squarespace.com. Log in your discuss account and discuss away. Skepticsandseekers@gmail.com if you want to send me an email, and reasonpress.something if you want to send hate mail.
Reasonpress@gmail.com. I really enjoy the hate mail.
Yeah. and you know, be sure to address my hate mail properly. Attention, Andrew or Matt. That's how my hate mail comes. So,
well, if you're no better at reasoning through Christianity than you are at your hate mail, I'm sure you'll do.
Look, folks, it's not that I don't want to hear it. It's just, no, actually, that's it. So now that I think about it, but there's a really bad argument that comes to mind. I often make this argument. Christians say that's a bad argument. Why don't we know for certain where the tomb of Jesus is? Why wasn't that a venerated site? Because people, especially back then, they'd venerate anything, and Christians would make all kinds of excuses as to why that happened. You know, Jesus rose from the dead. He didn't stay dead, but that doesn't matter. Then that would make the tomb a site where a great miracle happened, so people would venerate it harder. But it dawns on me, why did Christians start celebrating Easter? Because that's kind of a paganish celebration that Jesus didn't ask for either. The obvious retort to that would be, we celebrate Easter every day. And so this idea that we carve out a day and celebrate it once a year seems very almost paganish, and not in keeping with the story that we live daily, moment by moment, with the resurrection of Jesus. So it just seems like, you can't say, oh, they weren't the kind of people that would venerate the tomb, an actual physical site, but they were the kind of people who would craft a holiday around a resurrection. And I think that the simple matter is, we don't need any physical evidence or artifacts to have a holiday, but it becomes much trickier to say this is the tomb.
For me, it's the point that's being missed here is that an empty tomb can never do the job that Christians want it to do. And for the same reason, the resurrection story can't do the job that Christians want it to do. So it looks like this. There are lots of empty tombs. In fact, I just read a news article last night about George Washington's younger brother. Name began with a W. I don't remember what it is. It doesn't matter. They just did another burial excavation. They are trying to trace the genealogy of the Washington family to see who is related to George Washington and through what branches of the family tree. And there's some documentation about where his younger brother was buried. The grave is unmarked, right? And they did all of this family burial research, and they still don't know where he was buried. They didn't find his DNA in any of the remains that they were able to recover. Now, why is that important to this story? Well, he has as much of a right, or people have as much of a right to say that George Washington's younger brother, or he's not finding his bones and his DNA, is resurrected. Tomb's empty. He's gone. No longer with us. Elvis left the building. But nobody actually thinks that, right? He's just buried somewhere and the remains are lost.
Right.
What's my point? There are lots of empty tombs. Lots of empty tombs. And being able to say, here is where Jesus was supposed to be. It doesn't have any horsepower. It doesn't get us anywhere. It is a just so story. And whenever we substitute any other character, we know that it's a just so story.
So this is probably the best point that will be made today. So that's great. I want to do something kind of weird. I want to respond to that and pile on, but I promised Andrew that this would be about 20 minutes. Sucker. Look, I meant it in my heart. All right. So what I actually want to do is consider the question, why isn't Easter, for however long we've been doing it, why isn't it more effective? if the resurrection right. is so believable, if it has been proven so strongly, if the arguments for the resurrection are even more philosophically and academically rigorous than ever before, mm-hmm. why is church attendance falling year after year in almost every denomination? You know, the one denomination in the Gallup poll, recent Gallup poll that increased, I'll give it to you.
It's got to be it. I'm going to guess, but before you say it, I'm going to guess that it's commonly thought of as a cult.
Yes.
Is it really? Okay.
Yes.
Seriously, that was a total guess.
Mormons. Mormons.
Of course. You know, you and I follow recent book releases through the Library of Congress, or at least you used to. I don't know if you still do. I still follow some of the common releases through the National Library Service. The National Library Service is a branch of the Library of Congress, as some of the listeners may know. The National Library Service releases to print-challenged readers books almost daily. And I've noticed over the last couple of years a lot more Mormon content in those book releases.
Yeah, they're good. I mean, they're bleeding members, but here's the thing. I think what's going on with Mormonism is they're lying harder about their numbers, because when Mormons leave, their names don't come off the rolls, and it actually takes almost a legal process for a Mormon to get their name off the rolls. It's not worth it. And so every Mormon that was ever a Mormon is still a Mormon, plus anyone that becomes a Mormon. And so they can show growth even when they're shrinking. And I think that's actually what's happening with Mormons.
They've got another little trick. It's baptism for the dead.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. That, I'd forgotten about that, but you're right.
Baptism for the dead.
Even if people started taking their names off the rolls, they can just baptize more people who didn't ask for it.
Right. By the way, people, when I say it's a true story, I mean that they baptized for the dead. I don't think Mormonism makes any sense.
Right. Well, look, in all fairness, they are the only people that take Paul's words seriously, because he's the one who first gave us baptism for the dead. Just putting that out there. 1 Corinthians 15.
Aware of it, not responsible for it. This is you guys not knowing your Testament better than your Old Testament.
Right. And Christianity could turn the corner and start growing exponentially if more denominations started baptizing for the dead. So just putting that out there.
And we'd be in real trouble if all congregations just we'd still be on the roll.
And we might well be. So
you know, I'm an alien sinner, you know, bug-eyed monster. Oh no, that's not what that means.
Yeah, no, actually it does. Never mind that. I want to do something a little weird. I want to grant the resurrection all of its academic and philosophical power and say that I have soundly lost every debate I have had on the resurrection. I lost to Jonathan McClatchy. I kicked his ass. I lost to Jonathan McClatchy. I lost to Dale. Still kicking his ass. I've lost to Mac Attack when we've argued on the board. In fact, I would say that Mac Attack is the only one who Mike could claim to have actually beaten me in something, or else he's so infuriating. I just go blind crazy sometimes. And so this is one of the reasons I chose him as a co-host. If someone has a chance of getting me off my game, it's that guy. Never turn your back on Mac Attack. that's fine. I can't wait till we actually have a proper debate on the resurrection, but let's just grant the resurrection's truth based on all of the modern Christian arguments for it. And the reason I'm granting it for this is that Christians already believe it, right? Right? Christians do believe that Jesus actually rose from the dead, right? So why are they losing? Why are they leaving churches? Why do Christians who believe that Jesus rose from the dead walk away from their faith? How is that even possible? That, you know, why is it that nuns, religious nuns, N-O-N-E, as nuns, non-religious, why is that the largest religious category, the fastest growing religious category in the world? Not just America. Why is that? Why are nuns coming on so strong? Because many of us nuns came out of religion. We came out of religion. Why are fewer kids growing up believing in the resurrection? VBS is still happening. Church camp is still happening. And Christians are being more and more successful getting prayer and even preaching in schools, even as young as elementary schools. And yet they're still shrinking. So granting, as Christians do, that Jesus actually rose from the dead, why do we see Christianity failing? I'll give you the first shot at that. I have thoughts.
Why do we see Christianity failing? I think there are a lot of reasons. I really do. I think the kinds of Bronze Age demands that Christianity places on modern human beings makes it somewhat inevitable that Christianity is going to continue to fail. So I'll give you one example, just one. He made them man and woman.
Mm.
Okay, clearly bullshit. Mm. Sorry, clearly bullshit. And there goes your family rating. I know you cherish that.
Look. My parents might be listening, okay? And I want to cut down on the offensive language we use. And so please, in the future, just say clearly shit.
Oh, it's okay. Done.
Okay, thank you.
That's just one example. And look, I know you can go to the state of Alabama and, you know, you've gone back 150 years in rights of fully half of the human population.
Yeah.
But it doesn't make it reasonable. Right? Well, and we know that. And in fact, we know that it doesn't make it reasonable so much that right after the Alabama High Court says, oh yeah, embryos, those are humans, The state legislature acts to protect IVF, in vitro fertilization for the uninitiated in the state, right? They just overrode the state Supreme Court. My point to all of this, David, is that we do have, and we are winning the bigger war of can our reason about who we are and what we are be trusted?
Right. So human sexuality, big issue there. It's good you brought it up. I mean, this became apparent to me a few years ago when I saw the numbers about the acceptance of homosexuality being greater than 50% mm-hmm. among Christians in America, favorable toward. And that is something that I did not expect to ever see in my lifetime. However, I have very strong, I can't say too many revelatory things about my family. Although one day I'm just going to throw it all to the wind and do a show and just air out every bit of dirty laundry in my family. Because I'm tired of the whole idea of you got to protect your family's dirty laundry. I didn't ask to be the launderer. and I'm kind of done with laundering reputations. So that said, I will just say one of the things that blew the doors off of the human sexuality argument was the LGBTQ movement, and really just the L and the G part of the movement. Because we used to say that the numbers were so small that, you know, they were irrelevant. If you couldn't make fun and oppress gay people, then who could you oppress and make fun of, right? But the movement came out, the pride movements, and you might think, oh, that's, you know, what a shameful thing. But you know what happened with that movement? More people didn't become gay. You don't become gay because of popularity, okay? You can't become gay. You're gay or you're not. But more people admitted to being gay. More people came out. And all of a sudden, the numbers were big enough so that we couldn't pretend that they didn't exist. And then people in churches, people in Christian families started coming out. And you know what? At the end of the day, when the rubber meets the road, a mother looks at their kid, and they still love their kid. And the church party line be damned. And I think that more than anything else turned the tide on the issue of human sexuality. And so, you know, that doesn't mean that these parents stopped believing in the resurrection. They just stopped believing in doctrines that they had associated with the resurrection and, you know, God giving us commands about certain things. Modernity, at the end of the day, wins. When we learn better, you know, as a species, we're very slow. Don't get me wrong. Evolution is a slow process with fits and starts. But as we learn better, we do better. And religion is not a framework for learning better. It's a framework for staying entrenched in old ideas. But humanity doesn't stay entrenched in old ideas. Once again, it's a slow process. Social evolution is slow but steady. And so it's always going to be at odds. I'm just saying all of this to say I agree with your point. And in the competitive conversation style that we have, I feel like I've made your point better than you did. I win.
Well, I'm not done yet. There's another. You said, you know, why do I think it's? There's a second reason, and I think this one is equal to the first. Though I think we're going to need a few more years before we realize just how big an impact this has made. When you and I were children, and yes, this is a little self-revelatory.
I'll be 54 next month, folks.
And I will be
older.
56, one day earlier. The answer is old. Here's another reason. When you and I were children, there was a big superhero genre. Just bear with me. I know the superhero genre still exists. I know. But we had unflawed superheroes by today's standard.
Mm-hmm.
Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Captain America. These are the Justice League superheroes, the super friends. These are, by and large, unflawed superheroes, right? And ethically unflawed. Now, their powers may be limited, but that has nothing to do with the white hat, black hat nature of the cartoons, right? These are unflawed superheroes.
Unless you were Batman, in which case he was always a bit of a dark knight.
there you go. I'm going to leave that because we could spend a show and probably should on the evolution of Batman. Because you know the wham pow bang Batman is no more.
Well, that's right.
People at our age will get that reference.
Right. The Adam West Batman. However, it's important to say that the Adam West Batman was a departure from the earlier comics Batman. And so we've actually returned to the original source material for Batman. And they made a Batman for TV, a Batman for kids, in fact,
right,
that didn't ever actually exist in the canon.
So, and the reason that Batman is interesting in this conversation is because Batman was more or less an outlier. Today, and this is where I'm going with every bit. Today, we just don't stand up unflawed superheroes. We just don't do it. Why? Because the time of hero worship, the time of thinking there's such a thing as perfect with a capital P, or truth with a capital T. Those days are gone and should be gone. Why are they gone? Because we now live in a world where we are so connected, for better or worse. We are so connected that we know that those things don't exist and probably can't exist.
So let me just backtrack real quick. When you said truth with a capital T, I think what you meant is the idea that we could fully know truth with a capital T, not that reality doesn't actually exist.
So I'm actually talking about the truth, the superhero truth with a capital T, that there's some heroes so perfect that they have some access to truth that none of the rest of us do. That they have ethics with a capital E that are so pure and selfless and unadulterated that they always act not only with the best interest of the people around them in mind, but that they actually know what the best interest of everyone around them is.
Right.
That is the capital T, the capital E, the capital P, truth, ethics, and perfection that I am talking about.
Right. And that is the God, that is the God of the Bible as described by lots of people. He can do all kinds of things that seem wrong, but he's got the truth with the capital T. He knows exactly, you know, every butterfly effect of everything that He does, and you just have to believe that. But in our real life, we don't see any examples of that, and it becomes harder and harder and harder to swallow that story about that God.
Right. And we don't swallow that story now because more than ever before, it is increasingly unlikely that it's even possible. We can't swallow it like we could in the days when the family dirty laundry could be kept hidden, right?
Right.
And so that is a second thing. Nature is working against Christianity. Now I can hear all the Christian ethicists clamoring already. They're reaching for their keyboards. Fine. But you can shut me up, and it's easy. It's easy. If you've got a God and his ethics are perfect, and his knowledge is perfect, and his desire for all of us is perfect, then quit arguing over what that perfection is and introduce me to it. If I'm strawmanning your God, and by the way, I've been saying this for over a decade now. If I'm strawmanning
your God, I'm podcasting.
Introduce me to the real one. You can shut me up.
So that would put me in my first point. So even if I grant that Jesus rose, that was actually a perfect segue into this.
Completely accidental, but
better than the one that you tried on purpose earlier. Segues work best when you really point them out to the audience. That's what I've heard. I think my number one point for why the message falls flat, even though people quote unquote believe Jesus rose, is that they have an academic belief of it because somebody beat them in an internet argument. Well, okay, I guess the resurrection happened. I guess I can't prove it didn't happen. I guess that I should keep an open mind about it happening. Oh, I guess that, the tomb, we found some stuff, and you know there was something that said Mary, James, and Judas or what have you, but there was no Jesus ossuary, or there was, but it was gone, or whatever the argument is they're making that the resurrection happened, that only leads you to an idea taking up space in your head. It does not introduce you to the risen Jesus. The argument of the risen Jesus is not the same as a relationship with the risen Jesus. And so if you can argue me into saying, well, I guess you're right, he rose. First of all, I still don't believe it, can't prove it, but you won the argument on points. Okay. But where is he?
Right.
And that right. becomes the problem, because your argument cannot simply be an academic argument of forcing someone to mentally assent to the resurrection. That's meaningless in terms of Christianity. What's meaningful is actually having an encounter with Jesus. And I will grant Dale something here. If you can activate a sensus divinitatis in a person and have them have some kind of meeting or introduction encounter with the risen Jesus, even if it's not something that they can prove to someone else, then I would say that you've won the day. But people aren't having that. People aren't getting that. There is no meaningful encounter with the risen Jesus. So all you have is a air quotes, winning argument that he rose. Fantastic. But the argument, the knowledge of it without the encounter of it, yeah, you still lose. Christian, you still lose that. Yeah. That knowledge, that piece of information, is not enough to make a person overturn everything in their life. In some act of faith that this information is going to be meaningful to them, right? So, you have wasted your effort, I would say, by trying to force feed information to people. And in doing so, I would say, especially the internet apologist, you force fed that information in a way that makes the reality of Jesus even more repugnant. And so they haven't encountered Jesus. They've just encountered some asshole who won an argument. That's what they've encountered. And so you've got to find a way to match your intellectual rigor with the piece that matters, which is an actual encounter with Jesus. And until you do that, your Easter story will continue to leave your churches getting emptier and emptier. I mean, the proof of it is people are sitting there in church who have intellectual assent that Jesus rose, and they're still walking away.
There's another reason. I will give a third. Pretty well think that the final nail in the hand or foot or whatever is done here.
But not funny. Minus two. Sorry. Sorry.
Well, hey, I got lots more nails. Okay. Oh, that wasn't what you... Okay.
Yeah, okay, I'm sorry. Full three. Misread the machine. Anyway, go ahead.
There's another reason that I think Christianity is dying. And it doesn't matter whether we're talking about conservative Christianity or liberal Christianity or bizarre offshoot snake handling Christianity. It doesn't matter what it is. There's another reason that it's dying. And it's because we are all tired of waiting on the actual good God. And here's what I mean. We live in a time where we are ever increasingly capable of inflicting violence on each other in greater and more horrific ways. And the whole world, whether you are conservative or liberal, is tired of a God who's going to make it better later.
Yeah.
When we have a shooter walk into a school, And warning, folks, I'm not trying to trigger anybody. This is part of the culture of our times, and I am not using this for likes. I'm not using this for likes. I'm also not using it to ramp up the conversation or to create emotion. This is a problem we have, where people can walk into schools and harm children. But it's not the only place. We've got wars all over the globe right now. And every one of us, regardless of the divide between us, are tired of a God who supposedly has the power to make it better in the cosmic oatmeal cookie sense. And he leaves it in our hands to do so while promising a better future. We're all tired of that, no matter who you are. Why is Christianity having the problem that it is having today? Because your God is sitting on his hands while we are not.
Yes.
And if you've got a God out there, his religion deserves to die.
Yes, this was actually going to be my second one, too. So,
Sorry.
Right. No, you're not.
No, I'm not.
I know you. You're not sorry. You're gleeful. That said, I'm not gonna go to another one. I'm just going to make this point as if you didn't say anything. Audience, I have a short memory. People, because I spoke last, people are going to say, that was a good point, David. They're going to forget. Believe it or not, this is actually a tactic that can and has been used. Not by me. It's a cheap trick. I'm using it today. So for my second one, it is that I think that people who believe that Jesus rose are growing very weary of making excuses for what appears to be Jesus' inaction in the world. He rose and he listens to our prayers. People have been praying for the Middle East, peace in the Middle East, since the first beauty pageant. And yet, war just keeps breaking out. You know, even when there's not war, it always feels like there's a Cold War. There's never what you would call peace in that region. In fact, that region, I would say historically, has never had peace. It's never had it. And one would think it can never get it. But I mean, we have Jesus now, right? And we didn't have Jesus before. He was just up in heaven hanging out doing, saying words. I don't know what he's doing, but he came to earth and then he died and then he rose and that changes everything. And now we have an advocate with the Father directly through Jesus, and we can ask him for things and things that would be in accordance to his will. And the billions with a B and billions of prayers that happen every day, because people do it more than once a day, many people, for peace in that region gets us nowhere. And we have those same billions praying for peace and safety for our kids in school. Some shooter pops up. We have people saying these prayers on their knees, sometimes literally in churches, when a shooter comes in and shoots up the church. So we believe in this all-powerful God who sent his all-powerful Jesus to make the quote-unquote ultimate sacrifice. I don't know exactly what he sacrificed, but never mind. Because he still has everything. He has more than he had before. Anyway, it is so great sacrifice, though. Cool. We believe that, and he rose, but the world doesn't seem to be getting better. There's no evidence of his activity in the world. And so it does get a little bit wearying to, on the one hand, profess your belief in the resurrection of Jesus and have to continually make excuses for his inaction.
Yes. I am sadly headed down toward the end of the time that I have. There's more here. Oh God, there's so much more here. As a way to do an early wrap up, even if we keep talking. The resurrection story just doesn't make sense. The ethics of the supposed Christian God don't make sense and have yet to be untangled. And he's waited too damn long. You want to know why Christianity's dying? There are at least three of the reasons that I can think of. And we didn't plan for this show. We didn't plan to talk about this. This was you called me 5 minutes before we went on mic.
Yep.
And had no idea that this was the direction this conversation was going to take. And yet that's the honest internal atheist response from me, right? This is, you want to know? Well, I don't believe. And we haven't even gotten into hiddenness yet, although it's been part of every point.
Yeah, I think we have gotten into it, actually.
So I haven't done it expressly. It has been integral to every point. anytime your God waits, I really mean this, anytime your God waits, he's too late.
Yeah, especially for us. I mean, we're finite creatures. We don't have a lot of time, right? So when one of the arguments, we're talking genocide and WLC's latest defense of God's awful behavior with the Canaanites, you know, the point came up on the board. Well, you know, God was patient with them for 400 years. Let me stop you right there. Nobody lives for 400 years. So that actually is a senseless idea that God was patient with a people for 400 years, because the first people who were this evil should have been stopped. If it was so evil that God needed to step in and stop it, him waiting for 400 years for the people to turn around doesn't change the status of the evil of the first people who did the evil, you know. So we're making nonsense out of that. It's like saying, well, you know, the children of Israel, they were enslaved in Egypt for 400 years, and they'd been crying out to the Lord for 400 years before he finally answered their prayer. Well, let me stop you right there. He never answered their prayer. The first people who were enslaved, they died enslaved. In the next generation, they died enslaved. In the next generation, they died enslaved. And so to say that he answered their prayer, he didn't answer their prayer. He only answered the prayer of the people who were alive at the time he showed up. So
this is the kind of thing that just drives me. It drives me to distraction. It really does. You know, if I've got four children, and three of them die in a house fire, your God only answered the prayer of one of them. But by the way, just in case you're saying, but Andrew, what if he saved three? Your God is no better with me, because he had the capacity to save them all. And if he didn't have the capacity to save them all, then you can't convince me to worship him. And so go somewhere else and peddle your shit.
Okay. I promised you that we would get this in. This is a severe change of tone, but it's a promise I intend to keep. So, We talked a little bit before this show about the symbolism of a cross, wearing the cross. And this might actually be part of the reason. I don't know. I actually had another reason that I wanted to give that I'll just make my closing wrap up. But in case Andrew has to skidoo, I just want to give this in. Wearing a cross, we think of that as acceptable now because we don't kill people on crosses. And so we don't see crosses as a method of execution. We see it as a piece of jewelry. It's a beautiful symbol. We have become so disconnected to what the cross was that we don't even think about it anymore. It's just a secular idea, like a fish symbol. You know, the cross symbol and the fish symbol. It's the same thing in our mind. So we, you know, we just asked the question, well, okay, what if the Romans, instead of crucifying people, what if they used the guillotine? Would we wear guillotines around our necks, or would we put on masks that made it look like we were headless? What if it was death by burning alive? Would we wear little candles that we kept lit? What if it was death by shooting?
Would we burn our children so that they would forever carry a scar of being?
Oh, you know we would.
This is my girlfriend's question yesterday, right? She's like, this thing doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah. The only reason it makes sense is because, once again, we've become disconnected to with what the cross was. And I think...
If we had been beheaded, would we hand our children knives? Well, little knives. Yes, we would.
Right. And I'll tell you what would happen there. We would have little statuettes of the head of Jesus. The head.
I asked this morning, you know, you see these nativity scenes, right? And sometimes the nativity scene is placed around the foot of a dude on the cross, right? You know, if he'd been beheaded, would it be a nativity scene around the foot of a dude who was just beheaded?
Yeah. So the thing that I asked about this was, if we had little guillotines, how would we wear them? Because the whole idea is he was beheaded, and if we wore the guillotine around our neck, that would be somewhat ironic. It would, because we should be beheaded.
It's a little charm bracelet, and you know, you forever have a way to commemorate the death of Jesus and trim your nail.
So I will make this my final point, and I'll try to work this into it somehow. The silliness of this story overwhelms whether you believe a resurrection happened or not. So, it's not just of that story. We look at the teachings of Jesus, and I would argue that the teachings of Jesus were so radical, the teachings ascribed to Jesus, they were so radical that they didn't make any connection really with his own society. They make even less connection with us today. And the cognitive dissonance, I think because of shows like this, because there's been more conversation that's readily available, the cognitive dissonance has gotten stronger, and people recognize that, you know, maybe they don't actually believe the things that Jesus said, even if he was raised from the dead. When Jesus says things like, sell all your possessions and give the money to the poor, and he says that to a crowd, not just to a single person, what Christians have to do is say, well, okay, but that only applies if I love money and worship it as a god. Otherwise, I can pursue money just like everybody else. And so they do. So they create the situation where they can look at Jesus' attitude toward chasing the dime, and they have made it acceptable for them to chase the dime. And they come face to face with this idea and realize how far in Jesus' teaching was. Or another one would be, don't be like the Pharisees and pray out loud, you know, in the synagogue. Mind you, Jesus wasn't saying don't pray out loud at Walmart. This was actually in the synagogue where they can be seen and heard by man, but rather go in your room and lock the door and pray where you can't be seen. What is done in secret will be rewarded publicly. And what Christians have taken that to mean is, well, as long as you're praying in public for the right reasons, then it's okay. You know, so it's okay to stand up in the middle of a restaurant after church and hold your hands and bow your heads and make a loud prayer that kind of forces socially everybody to be quiet while your group prays to God, you know, to be seen. We see these sorts of things all the time, and we just kind of say, well, surely that's what Jesus meant, right? Right. I don't want to talk about it. Shut up. And you can go through all kinds of things like that. Be loving and meek and accept persecution, with joy in your hearts. And yet whenever someone says something that ruffles, you know, your feathers on the internet, you know, you blow up just like any atheist would blow up. And you justify it by saying, yeah, well, you know what? But I blew up with the right motives. or something like that. I mean, Dale famously does this. He has reasons for it. He and I have argued about this in public, so I don't think this is a big surprise I would bring this up. I think he's wrong about that. I'm right. You're wrong, Dale. That said, I get it, but Dale's not the only one like that. Not at all. Heck, Dale is a puncher compared to a lot of other Christians online that I've encountered. And so, once again, we find a way to look at the radical thing that Jesus says and then make it fit into our modern expectations of how we live. And the more these kinds of cognitive dissonances happen, I think the less people care about whether theoretically the dude rose from the dead or not, because he has less and less relationship with the lives we actually live in the here and now. And there isn't a lot of connection between his, quote unquote, his message and our reality. And so believing that he rose just doesn't change the reality that we live today. We still got to go to work and spend 8 hours a day, 9 hours a day at a job to barely pay for rent and a gallon of milk. And there's just nothing in the Christian message. There's nothing about the resurrection that's going to make us do anything other than that.
I agree. There's nothing left in the message. The only reason this message ever worked was because the secrets that the secrets that kept it alive couldn't be exposed broadly enough. Everybody now knows where the body's not buried.
There's I think the internet has been bad for Christianity because it's been good for conversation. And before, Christians could just take outspoken atheists and burn them at the stake or something, you know, whatever they did. Christians could shut them up. Christians were the government, you know, of Rome. Christians, they could, and then Christians were the government in England, Europe. They were the government. And this experiment with America and democracy suddenly says the government is not Christianity. The government is not religion. And that opened the door for public skepticism, for public debate. And that, frankly, has not been good for religion. It's been good for people. It's been good for enlightenment. I love the idea of the separation between church and state and having a secular government. And Christians, they try to support that idea, but I don't think they realize just how much that has destroyed the stronghold they had over people. And it's taken a while. Mm-hmm. It's taken a couple of hundred years, but here we are now. Here we are. And what Christians want to do is walk that freedom back and say, no, actually, America is a Christian nation. It's a religious nation. It's religion first. And we have the right to impose our religious beliefs in, you know, many subtle and gross ways. It's gone too far. And they've begun to see it.
Right. They're trying to, you know, the really interesting thing about this. And yes, Christians, I am talking directly to you. Is that no matter how hard you fight to take away secular freedoms in this country, and if you succeed in rolling back all of the Bill of Rights, and you put in a Supreme Court that uses originalist interpretation the same way you want to read the Bible, you're not going to get what you want. And the reason you're not is for the same reason that there are Sunnis and Shiites, because you don't have a consistent playbook right now, except hate anything that you can stop sucking. But if you get your wish, you're no closer to a unified government, because you're no closer to a unified Christianity. You're not going to get what you want because you can't agree on what you want.
Okay, 19, 58, 59, 20 minutes. All right, 20 minutes exactly. And on that bombshell, we will bid adieu. Happy Easter, everybody. To engage further, skepticsandseekers.squarespace.com. ReasonPress.net. The last time I went to ReasonPress.net, I could not get it to come up. You might need to flip a switch or something.
Yeah, bunches of ones and zeros switches at this point.
Actually. Yeah. But ReasonPress gmail.com. If for whatever reason you can't interact with that, subscribe. Oh, yeah, Facebook, cool. Reason Press has Still Unbelievable, the podcast. You can find it in your podcast feed of choice. Of course, we have this podcast. We do dailies. And by dailies, I mean whenever I feel like it these days. We just call them dailies because I was doing it daily for a while, and I might again at some point. Any...
Because it just sounds stupid to call them occasionally.
Right. They're occasionals. Right. You're right. They're dailies. So, right. Anything that you're working on, there's a gun show, that is to say a show about guns, over on Reason Press, in your podcast feed of choice. It's Still Unbelievable. The subject is guns. I think the title of it is just guns. I got so upset when I listened to that show. I called Andrew and said some not safe for work things about him and to him, but I got it out of my system. I'm good now. But if you want to get upset, forget about this show. Go listen to that show.
It was an excellent show. And the good news is, not a single child was killed in the making of this.
I don't know. I don't know, because it almost blew my brain apart. I blew a gasket. I am one less gasket than I had before. So,
unless you're using child in a different way.
I don't know. I'm just saying, all the children that may have been listening to that show. Never mind. No children listen to that show.
Excellent show. Yeah. Excellent show. Please go listen. Feel free to feedback. There were some things that weren't covered.
Yeah, Matt. Look, Matt's good. Matt's very good at this. Matt's good at this, and Matt and Andrew have a particular dynamic when they work together that they don't have when they do solo things or when they work with me. It's completely different. Completely. If you think you know Andrew and how he podcasts, you need to listen to Still Unbelievable. People come to my show when they don't want to be what they normally are. They want to be something else. So, they come here for that. Yeah, no, I don't. I've known you for a long time, and I'm not sure who the real you is, nor do I. It doesn't matter. One day, OJ is gonna find the real killers. So he's gonna devote his fortune to that. So anyway, Punch Drunk, nice to have you, folks. We'll see you next time, and we will have Mac back on. We are going to finish this show on Calvinism. I am really looking forward to it. There's a lot of good stuff that we have yet to talk about. And until next time, I will see you in the comments. And in the meantime, I'm out.